It's hour number two. Bickley and Murata coming to you live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Three games into the season for the Coyotes. Game four tonight in Vegas against the Golden Knights. And here to talk about it with us is the Chief Hockey Development Officer of the Arizona Coyotes and our friend Shane Doan, who joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Doaner, how are you, man?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking, Vince.
Congratulations on the new job.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm excited, and I'm learning. So hopefully, yeah. I can keep doing that.
It must have been getting boring riding horses all the time, huh, Shane?
Yeah, you can only do that for so much. And actually, right now, like, is like the time to be doing it because everyone loves Yellowstone, so it's like right in my wheelhouse right now. So
exactly. All right, let's talk about this because I know you, and I know that you wouldn't want to take a cosmetic hood ornament kind of position. I don't think you'd do this job if you didn't think you can contribute. In a perfect world, where are you going to help the Coyotes get better?
Well, in COVID, I think it's pretty much in anywhere they ask. So it's kind of, I think in a perfect world, like you said, I think I can help on the hockey side. Obviously, I think I have experience with the league, and I have experience just in the league on a daily basis for the number of years that I played and the relationship I have with the other managers and stuff. So I can help Bill out. And then on the business side, I know that through the years of being here in the Valley, of understanding what it is to be a professional hockey team in Arizona, I think I have a good understanding of what that takes. So I think both of those sides I can help out quite a bit, and that's the plan.
Now, a lot of people were very upset when you were shown the door by the Coyotes organization as a player, and people, you know, held that grudge for a while. How important was that for you to patch that up, to get back on working terms? And how important was that for this current ownership regime of the Coyotes to make that whole relationship work again, too?
Yeah, I love the Coyotes, and although I was treated beyond great by the fans, and it was unbelievable for the way that I was treated and by the fans, and the way that it ended was a little bit awkward. But I think that the new ownership made a great, approach of trying to come in, and they talked to me, and I talked with Mr. Murillo and his son, and then also with Javier. And once I kind of got to know them and they kind of got to know me, it was something that seemed to fit really seamlessly. So it worked out really well. And their goal is they're really pushing this Coyotes Care. That's kind of what they want to try to help and do things in the community. And that's something that I think is much needed, especially at this time.
You know this better than anybody, having been a captain for decades. Anybody who's been around hockey knows that there's a certain gain knowledge. You have to be in the game a while to kind of unlock some of its secrets. And there's a lot of ownership groups that have taken over teams and kind of had a clue, but really didn't know all that much about the game. And I don't think it's an insult to the current ownership to say that they fit in the ladder. How close are we to building a real hockey organization? And is it your instincts that is what this ownership group wants to do?
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, you watch and you listen to the way that they want to know things. They sit and they want to ask questions, and they're trying to find answers to questions that they have, not not assuming that it's, you know, the obvious one. Sometimes with professional sports, you have to realize the nuance of the game and everything that goes along with it to understand the mindset to see what you're dealing with in the relationships with the players and relationships with the other organizations and the relationships with the league. That's half of the battle, and they seem very eager to want to do that. Obviously, they brought in Bill as somebody that has some experience in the amateur draft and with the St. Louis Blues, and they're trying to rely on him as well. And I think that they're trying to do all the right things, and I guess that's really what you hope for. And Javier is just a guy that he's so humble in his approach. It's so encouraging, and the fact that that's who you want to be around, that's who you kind of want to follow.
Shane Doan, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. I'm curious too, Shane, about the whole process of you landing in this position with the Coyotes. When was this first brought up to you? How long did this take to come to fruition to get you back into the organization?
Yeah, it was when everything was kind of going on during the summer a little bit, I actually reached out to Javier when he got the job because I'd heard from a few people, him and Bill Daly were classmates in passing, and then they worked together, or they worked together on a couple deals with the NFL. And so, and Bill had some great things to say about Javier. And so I reached out to just say that I knew Bill and that I was friends with Bill and that he said great things. And I'm a fan of the Coyotes and I want them to do well. And by hiring you, that sounds great. And then that was about it. That was in July. And then we started talking back up again and probably towards the end of, I guess that would be towards the end of October, or I guess the end of middle of November, we started talking again. And that's when we started to get a time when we would spend some time and get to know each other and see what it all detailed and how it all would, if something was to work, what it would do. And the more that we got talking to each other, the more that I felt comfortable with what they were doing. And to be honest, they don't know me at all. So, I mean, some people had said that I could help them, and some people had mentioned that, you know, I love the Coyotes and I wanted to help them and make them better, but realistically they didn't know me at all. And so they want an opportunity to kind of get to know me as well. So it worked out well.
I'm sure they went through a very, very thorough vetting process and heard some horrible things about you, Shane.
Right. Call me.
Well, right.
Thanks, Jared.
That's good, Jared. Yeah, no, but, you know, I had heard that, and it kind of spoke to their newness and how little they actually knew about hockey, that they were not familiar with you as a player. But in a weird way, that's also kind of good, that they're not just kind of going, okay, you know what, we're in a little patch of public relations crises here. Let's bring in a guy that makes everyone happy about the Coyotes.
Yeah, that's I agree with that, Dan, wholeheartedly. Like, that, it was... obviously, as a player, everyone has an ego and you'd like people to know who you were. But at the same time, it was really encouraging to be like, no, we're not just going to do this because everyone's saying that we should do this. We're going to do this and we're going to make sure that this is a fit because we don't want it to be awkward and we don't want it to, you know, you come in and us all of a sudden realize that we made a mistake or you made a mistake and this has to be something that's even more public. So I thought it was... It showed discernment on their part, and as well as I wanted to make sure, too. So it worked out well.
Shane Doan, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. You know, we're just a few games into the season. You mentioned earlier in the conversation, Shane, about the team on the ice. What are your early impressions about what you've seen from this group?
Well, I thought it was huge in the first game when you're down 3-1, and they score to make it 3-1 with only about 8 minutes left, and we find a way to battle back. I think Connor Garland has been a spark plug in all three games and somebody that's kind of driven the emotional, I guess, attitude of the team, which is good because you need people to do that. You look at the guys that have scored so far with Phil and with Clayton Keller and Oliver getting a couple points the other night. Obviously, him going down is huge for us and hurts. But you see those guys kind of having success and you get excited. Schmaltz scored last night or the other night. So you're starting to get, you know, the guys that need to score are scoring, and you hopefully that they can keep that going and that we can find a way to get a win tonight and then move forward going from there.
I'm sorry, Donner. One of the things that I'm really kind of vibing on with the NHL is this weird condensed schedule now where your schedule is basically series against teams, most of them two-game sets, but this is a four-game set against Vegas. In a sport like hockey where things can get chippy really quickly, what do you think of this?
I love it. I think it's awesome. I think, hey, I made this argument like a couple of years ago. Where I said that it would actually, if you just want to do it solely on the environmental side, you could make an argument that the plane's not flying that many times and playing in one spot and saving a flight is actually, we're doing it to go green on top of the fact that it creates these amazing rivals. I think it's great. I think it's going to be so fun. I think that as the season goes on and you're going to play Las Vegas 8 times, you're going to play LA 8 times, you're going to have some serious animosity, and that makes for better hockey.
Do you think there can be an argument to be made to keep that aspect where your entire schedule is played up of just division games, or would that be overkill when things are more normal?
I think that might be a little bit overkill in the fact that you want to play, like you might go with everyone else once. I don't know, you divide it up some way, but to have that series mindset, I think it's kind of cool. Like, I love that about, I mean, baseball's different because you have different starting pitching, and it can, and it's not really fair to have just one game series because you're starting pitching. But in hockey, I think it's a way to create some. Everyone's saying our league's getting too nice at times, so it's a way to create a little bit of animosity, and that'll work. It'll happen.
That's interesting. Who is saying that? Because you're right. When people like pine for the glory days of the NHL, there's a lot of blood on the ice in those in that era.
Yeah, and that's the like the intensity of our sport is what makes playoffs so much fun to watch. And I mean, you don't want to. I guess too much of a good thing isn't that good either. Like you got to be careful there if you're going to take away from the playoffs a little bit by having too many series. But I think you could do like these back-to-back games where you play each other twice. That's going to add to it. And I think it's not something that I'm against. I think it's something that could work. Whether they go to it, it's totally different. But I'm excited for this year.
Shane Doan, the Chief Hockey Development Officer of the Arizona Coyotes, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We know at this point, Shane, that the Coyotes are one of three NHL teams right now that are allowing fans at home games, even though it's only 3,400 fans. There's been some controversy. There's been some eyebrow raising over it. What do you say to people who question the logic, especially in Arizona, of letting fans into a venue to watch hockey when our numbers are so skewed out of control in terms of COVID?
Yeah, that's obviously something that we're very aware of. And you, with regards to the app and the testing and the, everything that goes along with having to get into the building, going through the temperature checks and getting your making sure masks and social distancing, we've been told, and we're going completely off of the medical staff that this is safe and we can do this. And so that's first and foremost, above all the things, that's kind of what we're watching for. And then we hear from, like, I can't tell you how many parents and people come up to me and are saying, like, man, this is the first time I've had my kid outside of the house and seen him actually be a kid at a sporting event where he's actually enjoying, like, dancing and having a good time with me, and we're connecting again. I honestly know people are going to come up and say that to me because I'm with the club and they want to, you know, impress me. So I'm not biased to the fact that it's a little skewed, but people just constantly come up to me in the last 3 or 4 days saying that exact thing, that this is something that their kids and they needed mentally to have a break from everything else that's going on, and that they appreciated it. So the medical thing is first and foremost, and we're watching that and we're keeping a very close eye on that. And then the second part is that we're grateful for the opportunity for people to kind of have a small, tiny, little slice of what normality used to be.
Yeah. All right, let's talk some football. have you given any retirement advice to Larry Fitzgerald?
No, I haven't given any retirement. Are you kidding me? I'm his biggest fan. He has to come back. Like, he has to come back. I'm watching football again. I want him to keep coming every year, obviously.
But they don't throw him the ball anymore, Doan. What's he going to do?
That part is, I don't want to be a coach, so I'm just, I think that the guy that's number two all time, and yeah, I think there's a couple games where he had 8 and 9 catches this year where he showed that it's more than capable. You got to get him the ball. Like, you just have to. And it wasn't like, you know, it's just, he's so valuable. And I hope he comes back.
Well, let's say he did call you and said, I'm thinking about retiring. Is this what you would tell him?
What advice would you, besides saying no, besides going, no! Come on, Jared, will you get with it, Carlin?
Please. Well, I'm not going to interrupt your interview.
All right.
Oh, my. You'll just jump in when it's time to carve me, though, eh, Jared? So, you know what? I would tell him that there is nothing like playing. Like, I love what I'm getting to do, and I loved what I got to do at the league. And there's that element that you never want to be the last guy in the room to know that you should be done. But hey, if you're playing, I don't care. I'll keep playing till the day I love it. And for him, I want him to keep playing. And if he's enjoying the game, and I think that you can't unring that bell once it's gone. Yeah. And it's not something the rest of your life you have to look back. And if you think you have enough in the tank for one more year, then try it for one more year.
Yeah, it's interesting because football players, they get this adrenaline rush because the crowd is right there and they can hear it all. And hockey, I think it's a little different. I mean, you can hear the crowd, but there's a plexiglass barrier and a lot of y'all are wearing helmets and all that kind of stuff. What is the moment you can't replace in hockey? What is the comp to the football player kind of feeling that gladiator vibe with the crowd? What is the comp in hockey? What did you experience?
Standing on the blue line for the national anthem in a playoff game. There is, in Chicago, like, I'm telling you, I'm like, it's emotional. Like, it's beyond emotional. Like, you can't believe, some guys move, some guys twitch. I like to just stand there and be quiet. And I remember sitting in the stands looking down at watching guys for the national anthem and thinking how amazing that is. And when I was, and how cool that would be to be standing there. And I don't know why, for whatever reason, as a kid, I thought that was cool. And when I got the opportunity to stand totally silent, I usually was closed, had my eyes closed and was praying and just standing there in the middle of the ice with everything going on around and everyone getting excited. And for Chicago National Anthem, holy man,
yeah.
it's like, you
cool.
can't experience
That's
it.
Cool.
You can't experience, unless you're on the ice and you hear it, it's all being directed right down at you. It was pretty. You know what was close to that, which is so funny? Sorry to jump in.
No, go ahead. No, this is what I asked for.
I did the Phoenix Symphony one time. I conducted the Phoenix Symphony.
I remember that, yeah.
And when you do it, it was the same feeling as when you're standing at center ice. Like all the instruments and everyone are all faced, so the music comes right through you. And when it hits, on your down drop, it hits you. It's like, takes your breath away. Like, you forget what you're doing. Like, you have
wow.
no idea what you. It's absolutely unbelievable that it goes from such silence to such, like, harmony and
that's
everything
cool.
that goes with it.
That's really
but
cool.
But standing on the ice in Chicago, that's what it feels like, but it's 21,000 people yelling directly down at you, singing all in one. It is just, it's amazing. It's spectacular. And I don't know if that's what football players feel like, but that's a feeling that I miss the most. When you could ever have that feeling again,
that's
I'd give
cool.
anything to share that with people.
Yeah, but I mean, everything now is altered, as we know, Shane. So
yeah.
What feedback do you get from the players who played in the bubble in Edmonton or played in Toronto last year and that are playing in empty arenas now? How different is it for those players?
It's drastically different. The guys are like, it feels like you're a kid again, like you're playing in a minor hockey game, really. And not even that, because usually you had your parents yelling at you, and that was probably it's totally different. And you don't hear the sound. Like on TV, they sometimes will put sound into it,
yeah.
but there's no sound in the buildings. Like, the buildings are silent.
Yeah.
So for them, when they actually couldn't believe how loud our building was at the last game, in the fact that it wasn't people yelling and screaming, it was just people in the building.
Yeah.
And it was, the nuance was kind of, they were excited about it.
Yeah,
they say it's drastically different, and it's hard to keep that edge and that emotion.
Yeah, people ask me, because I get to do PA for the Suns, so I'm basically doing PA in an empty arena, and even Bic was asking me, what's it like? And the way that I described it was, I have a front row seat basically to watch the best players in the world play a pickup game, because that's what it feels like.
That is exactly what it is. So do they still call you the public announcer, or do they call you just the
announcer,
like,
the address
yeah, like,
announcer,
the players personal information guide or something? Like, I don't know what it would be, because there's no public in there with you. That's hilarious, actually. When you said it, that sounded funny.
Yeah, it's a weird experience, no doubt about it.
No kidding. And have you noticed their energy or anything that's different? Because I wasn't in the bubble. So, I mean, talking to the players, they tell me, but you would have even a better understanding of that, of seeing it from just being so firsthand.
I haven't really noticed much on that front. I think the players are pretty dialed in. What I do notice more is the communication on the court. You hear a lot more. And the reaction from the crowd, or from the bench, I should say. Like, when a player comes out of the game after a good few minutes on the floor, you really hear the reaction from the teammates. But from an intensity standpoint, it's pretty close.
Yeah, well, Vinny also heard an exchange between Chris Paul and Paul George that would make even you blush, Stoner. he can't even say it on the radio.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine that anyone would ever say anything inappropriate in the middle of a basketball game.
Never.
Basketball players never overreact to good plays by their teammates on the bench.
Never.
They just clap quietly and acknowledge, yeah. Great job.
That's right. That's what they do.
Well, speaking of that, since we're comparing the two sports right now, what's the equivalent of that in hockey? Because we know, and we saw it last Suns game with DeAndre Ayton and that reverse dunk, the reaction from the bench. Is there something that a hockey player can do that can get that reaction from the bench?
I guess for the most part, it's got to be beat a guy one-on-one and score a nice goal. That will get a reaction. You'll get a reaction from the bench with a big hit. Like, you watch the bench on a big hit, and you'll see the whole bench go, get up. In a fight, you'll see everybody get up.
Yeah.
But no one goes you know what the biggest response from, for the most part, is a block shot. The other night, Claude Lemieux's boy, Brendan Lemieux.
I saw that. It's crazy.
He blocked a shot and then got up and then blocked another one. And for the most part, when that happens, especially guys that, your teammates will go a little bit over the top for you. But no one, it's pretty subdued for the most part. Even like when Connor McDavid scored that goal last year where he beat O'Reilly in Toronto on a nice, nice goal. And it wasn't really much of a reaction. Overtime players go crazy.
Yeah. That's a good point. Especially the idea of blocking shots. You know that your team has got ultimate peak level camaraderie if somebody's laying on the ice to block a slap shot. That's probably one of the more selfless acts in sports. Has to be.
It is. And if you saw the highlight of Lemieux, he takes one in the ankle. He's trying to get up. He can't get up. Just gets up, and it's probably a second later, same guy gets another shot, and he lays down and takes another one off the foot again, and now he can't get up on either foot
the broadcast footage that I saw of that particular, I just watched it this morning, they just zeroed in. There was no, it was a tight shot just on him. And the struggle he had getting to his feet was unbelievable. Like most people, the human reaction would be, I got to get off the ice here. But he had it within him to take another. It was amazing.
It looked kind of like the comedy relief when the guy gets hit and you're like, oh, and then, oh no, he got hit again. Like, have you seen the soccer, the penalty kick soccer one where the guy's like, it keeps hitting the crossbar and hitting the guy in the head every time?
Yes, it's so fantastic. That's exactly what popped through my head when you were describing that, Shane.
He tried to get out of the way, but you can't anymore. You're heading to the corner and it's still hitting you. So,
well, Donor, it's always good to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for carving out some time for us. Again, congratulations and best of luck in the new job.
Hey, thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate everything except for Jared.
Yeah, you and us both.
That's the way we feel too, Donor.
Right.
I feel bad. The poor guy's greatest experience was standing on the ice during a playoff.
I can remember such rare
things. They have a good memory, Shane.
Thanks.
Feel free, Donor, to come on down and put him in a headlock the way you did with Gambo that day.
Pummel him.
Whenever you want. Whenever our doors are open again, feel free to come down and pummel him.
Open invite.
All right, I'll be apologizing the whole time I'm doing it.
See you, Donor.
See you, Donor.
See you, guys.
Shane Doan, the Chief Hockey Development Officer of the Arizona Coyotes, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit coulterinfinity.com. Coming up, we've got the Wednesday edition of Start, Sit, Cut. Straight ahead, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata want to know, who would you start, sit, or cut?
All right, it is Wednesday, which means it is Start, Sit, Cut time, and I will give you guys three options, and you'll have to tell me which ones you will metaphorically start, which you will sit, and which you will cut. You're essentially ranking them in order. And we'll start with some football here. And we're looking at three all-time, top three at their position, potentially, all-time greats ending their careers this season. Who had if all three of these players retire, who had the most underwhelming end to their career? Start, sit, cut. Larry Fitzgerald, Drew Brees, Adrian Peterson.
All right.
So we're starting the most underwhelming?
Starting the most underwhelming end of their career. I'll start Adrian Peterson. I'll sit Larry Fitzgerald. I'll cut Drew Brees.
That is absolutely the correct answer. Peterson gets started. You could ask 100 football fans, what team did he play for this past year?
Yeah. And not only that, his legacy is just so weird and muddled.
Yeah.
And spread out over so many NFL cities.
Yeah, the last few years especially.
Yeah.
Sort of like the end of Shaq's career.
Yeah.
Since he left the Vikings, Arizona, New Orleans, Washington,
Detroit. Wow. And to his credit, he ran hard every place he's been.
Yeah, did have 600 yards rushing, but yeah, he gets started. Fitz, set, Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Yeah, second weekend of the playoffs. He gets cut.
Yeah, and now if you change the verbiage of that question, you might change the order of the answer. If you asked what was the most disappointing ending, I think you put Drew Brees first. Not because, the fact of the matter was he got to play in a playoff game, and that's all good. But he has now been the quarterback of three consecutive home playoff losses for the Saints. 2-1 and duns.
Another way I could have phrased it was, what end to their career looked least like the player that you know?
Well,
could be Larry.
That might be a different answer, too. Yeah.
That might be starting Larry.
Yeah, right.
All right.
That's very true.
Yeah. All right, we talked about, and we'll talk more about all that later, Deshaun Watson, where he's going to go, and perhaps being linked to the San Francisco 49ers. We've talked about, would the Cardinals even think about trading Kyler Murray for him? And when we had Mike Sando on, he said, well, the Rams might not be so interested in staying with Jared Goff. So start, sit, cut, which team would be the best team if they added Deshaun Watson? The Rams, the 49ers, the Cardinals?
I'm going to start the 49ers. I'm going to sit the Rams, and I'm going to cut the Cardinals.
That's the right answer.
Not to say that the Cardinals wouldn't be really good with Deshaun Watson, potentially, but I think those other two teams right now have more pieces that lead you to believe, too. I mean, a playoff team this year in the Rams, San Francisco would have been a playoff team if not for all the injuries, and they're going to be among the favorites next year regardless.
And just think about the studly way the 49ers ended this season, given how decimated they were. They pummeled the Cardinals, and then they gave the Seahawks all they could handle in the final week of the season. And that's a team with nothing at all to play for. A team that had dealt with wildflowers. What a lovely
football season that would be.
Full of wildflowers.
We just couldn't get past our wildflower issues.
Yeah. There's your song of the day by The Cult, Jarrett.
The wildflowers?
Not the wildflower.
Wildflowers.
Yeah, okay.
Wildflower.
Oh, boy.
Wildflower, you got it. Okay. F-L-O-U-R, F-L-O-W.
No, it's not a cooking song.
Okay. Yeah, it is. Right. Yeah, all-purpose flour. That's
all
what I'm looking for.
All-purpose flour, gotcha. Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, let's say one more here in football. And Philip Rivers is retiring, and he is very high in the list of all-time passing yards. So I'm giving you the top three players in all-time passing yards to have never even made a Super Bowl.
Okay.
And I want you to start, sit, cut, who was best, who had best in their prime. Philip Rivers, Carson Palmer, Warren Moon.
I will start Warren Moon. I will sit Philip Rivers. I'll cut Carson Palmer.
Again. That's
Again?
The correct answer. Wow. We are dialed in today, Bill.
Yeah.
It's a sign of lame questions.
I mean, it pains me.
Kidding, Jarrett.
It pains me to put Carson Palmer behind Philip Rivers, because I am a big Carson Palmer fan.
Yeah, I like Carson better.
But in terms of durability, availability, leadership, all of those things, Rivers gets the nod. But Warren Moon, I mean, he spent a good portion of his prime years in a different league. I mean, he might have rewritten the record books.
Okay. Today, National Popcorn Day. Start, sit, cut these popcorn toppings. Butter, cheese, caramel, or caramel, or caramel, or caramel, however you say it.
I'm going in the order you presented them. Starting butter, sitting cheese, and cutting caramel.
Yeah, definitely. Starting butter, I don't think popcorn works without it. Cheese is good, but not without a little bit of butter as well. So I'm sitting butter and I'm cutting caramel. I do not want sweet popcorn.
I cannot. Caramel popcorn is so good.
Now, I found it. You probably have had it, too. I always found it at Disneyland, at some of the gift and candy shops that they had in the package, the chocolate caramel. Oh, my God. Maybe I'll change
chocolate caramel?
Yeah. It was drizzled with chocolate, but it was all... Oh, it was like... I've never tried crack, but I'm thinking the sensation was
so similar.
I mean, I don't. It is addictive. I'm not sure people describe it as delicious, though. Boy, this crack, so tasty.
Well, I'm just talking about the addictive nature of this popcorn.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I've never tried crack. I'm going to just write that down for the end of the Today is National Bear Day.
No, it's not.
One of these days this week is.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you.
No, you've got to be kidding me that you saying that one of these days.
Well, whenever I'm on Starts to Cut and I say today is that day, I mean within the last couple of days.
Oh, my God. Are you somebody who celebrates your birthday week, too?
I don't want to pull back the curtain.
Oh, I'm so disappointed.
National Bear Day is February 27th. Well, no, that's Polar Bear Day.
Yes, that's not good.
Okay, explain to me what National Bear Day is.
Not to be confused with World Bear Day,
yeah,
which is
right.
March 23rd. Just or
Teddy Bear Day.
How many days do bears get?
Problem
How many
with
days
bears?
Do bears deserve?
Oh, no. You know what? I forgot. I hate to even correct myself because you're going to make fun of me. It's
so
not National Bear Day at all. It was National Winnie the Pooh Day. That's why I wrote that.
I want to hear
one.
The original question. What was the original question? Let's pretend it was National Bear Day.
You want to pitch in and we can actually send Jarrett to like handwriting camp or something like that?
Start sick cut
producer school.
He doesn't do anything on a computer. It's all handwritten and it's all hieroglyphics.
Old school. Yeah. Start sick cut these fictional bears.
Okay, I like this question. All right.
Yogi Bear,
mm-hmm.
Fozzie Bear, and Winnie the Pooh.
Go ahead, Big.
Bare
your soul.
Who's the bear from Jungle Book?
Baloo the bear.
That's my favorite.
Okay. You could do it right in here.
Can I?
Yeah, I'll let you do it. Ted, you could
start,
also.
I will
start Baloo. I will sit Dicka.
Okay. He's not fictional, though.
Kind of is. Yeah. Oh, I'll cut Fozzie. You know, actually, out of the three you gave me, I think I'll start Yogi, sit Winnie, cut Fozzie.
Yeah, boo-boo.
I'm starting Yogi, sitting Fozzie, and cutting Winnie. Put some pants on, man.
Come on, Winnie.
Put some pants
Winnie, you ever
on,
Winnie
right?
the Pooh it around the
right.
house?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay. I think that's what Rich Rod got
right.
fired for.
He did. Is that the awkward ending of Start, Sit, Cut?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Happy Bear Day, everybody.
I had one more. I think this one might be too easy. But best number 46s in sports history.
Ooh.
Let me guess who's on the list.
Go, because there's not that many.
Andy Pettit.
Yes.
Doug Plank.
How the hell do you know this stuff?
Doug Plank.
And no.
Not Doug Plank? No.
No? There's a defense named after him.
Okay. Yeah.
How could you not include him?
Okay. Hold on. Aaron Baines?
No. These are the three that I had. Andy Pettit, Lee Smith, borderline Hall of Fame closer, and five-time Pro Bowl tight end Todd Christensen with the Raiders.
I'm so glad you didn't ask that question.
Good. Andy Pettit, start, I suppose. But not a great number, 46, for all-time greats.
Who was the second one you said?
Lee Smith? Yeah. You're double-checking me now?
I don't remember him. I guess I do remember it. He wore a bunch of different numbers.
You know what I remember about Lee Smith? There was no human being who took longer to walk from the bullpen to the mound. It was less than a saunter.
Yeah, Doug Plank got shafted on that.
He did.
On that.
Sorry.
We both would have started Doug Plank, who's a heck of a nice guy,
Happy
too.
Happy National Bear Day, Carlin.
The planking meme.
Happy National Bear Day, Doug right. Plank. See what I did there?
I do.
Came all full circle. Coming up next, what to expect from the two quarterbacks in the NFC Championship game. We'll explore next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Well, if you like matchups between legendary quarterbacks in the postseason, you've had a few already in this postseason, and you got another one coming up Sunday in the NFC Championship game. The Green Bay Packers hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the first time ever in the playoffs. Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers with a trip to the Super Bowl on the line. Can't ask for much more than that from a quarterback standpoint, can you?
No, you really can't. I mean, it's got everything. And to me, you're looking at a guy in Aaron Rodgers who is having probably just a season that is giving him such joy. Because whatever he felt going into the year in terms of angst and anger towards his organization, he's not only proving a point to them, but the MVP debate has gone from being a multiplayer deal to being Russell Wilson to being this guy to being this guy. And with each passing game, it seems to be more and more clear that Aaron Rodgers is the best player in football. And I even heard the announcers say so at the end of last week's playoff game, that it's pretty obvious who the MVP of this league happens to be. He's just at a next level right now in terms of what he's able to understand and what he's able to read and everything he does. I was watching a little highlight clip of him that somebody put together, and just the extraordinary way that he moves the pocket. Just, it's stuff that you don't get unless you've got X amount of years in this league, and he's still got transcendent arm strength. He can see. He can get the ball anywhere on the field. So you got that. And then you got this Brady factor that is really starting to fascinate me because, as I was saying when we were meeting before the program, the thing with Tom Brady, and when I take away my own bias and I look at what he is and what he does best, what he does best came into view for me at the end of last week's playoff win against the Saints, and I think it's going to be in view all this weekend, and that is when the pressure is ratcheted up to the highest level in the NFL, there's nobody better at just not feeling it. And he was that way as a rookie. He was that way when he won his first Super Bowl, when he calmly bounced the ball to stop the clock, reached up casually with one hand and caught it. And it's just, there's something about that man and his ability to handle pressure and zone in and never make mental errors in big moments that he does better than anybody in the NFL. And now he's going to have a game full of it. So to me, this is as good as it gets, because whatever Tom Brady has lost it with age, and it's not a ton, but it's certainly noticeable, whatever he's lost with age, the moment and what he's searching makes up for it. Aaron Rodgers is at peak level right now. So to me, it's a fabulous matchup.
I agree with everything you said on Brady. You're not going to get that strange, wow, what happened to Tom Brady performance on a stage like this. But, and you know how I feel about Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's ridiculous. But if you're looking and searching for, you know, nitpicky points on his resume, maybe it's not even nitpicky. He's got one Super Bowl, and a lot of the reason why he only has one Super Bowl is his performance in conference championship games. And I looked this up last week. Have you seen his total touchdown over interception ratio for this year? It's 10 to 1. It's 50 over 5.
That's
which
insane.
Is just ridiculous.
That's insane.
Of every quarterback in NFL history that has thrown at least 1,000 passes, he's got by far the lowest interception rate of any of them. But in just NFC championship games, and I heard Gambo talking about this yesterday, I looked up his stats as well, underwhelming. His touchdown to interception rate in four conference championships games in his career is 6 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions, which is so out of the norm for him. In his entire regular season career, Aaron Rodgers has played 190 games. He's got 16 games of multiple interceptions, two or more picks. He's got three such games in 19 playoff games, and they're all in conference championship games. That could be deemed concerning. Now, he's never played a conference championship game at Lambeau. This will be the first time. And you would think that somebody who is, you know, that much experience in cold weather, late season games, as Aaron Rodgers does, the weather won't be an issue. But, I mean, I can't say that I'm concerned that Aaron Rodgers won't play well, but I am shocked to look at those numbers that on the big stage in conference championship games, he has not been his best.
No, he hasn't been. I don't know if he's ever really had weapons like he does this year. Because, you know, with what he's got at his disposal, I think it's the risk of having that kind of performance around him, I don't think's as great. But I do think that's interesting. As far as the weather goes, this was an interesting point that BA made earlier in the week. He said that cold weather nowadays is not nearly as big of a deal as it used to be because it's a lot easier to stay warm on the sidelines with portable heaters and stuff. Back in the day, that wasn't the case. Back in the day, you were almost like, it was so Spartan in the NFL, you're basically lighting fires in garbage cans on the sideline. You know
true.
What I mean?
It's true.
And now that's not the case. And BA said, if you can stay warm on the sidelines, getting in and get out of the game, it's not an issue. If it's brutally cold, that's a different story. I don't think it's going to be that way in Green Bay this weekend.
I haven't checked the forecast.
Yeah. I don't know. This is going to be fascinating to me because Todd Bowles is really good in these situations, but Aaron Rodgers is monstrously talented. What was the score of the Packers-Bucks game earlier this year?
It was not close.
It's pretty ugly.
Yes, it was 38-10 Tampa Bay.
Yeah. So that's working in the Packers' favor, if you ask me.
And that was the only multi-interception game Aaron Rodgers had all this year.
Wow.
Outside of that game, he's thrown 50 touchdowns and three picks.
High of 28 on Sunday in Green Bay.
That's beautiful. That's basically a
heat
wave. It's nice. That's shorts weather.
Any snow in the
45% chance of snow.
All right.
But even that, because now they have the heated fields and stuff, it's not as big a thing where, like, the, you know, the snow piles up on the field real quickly.
Yeah, but I don't know what the forecast is for Kansas City, but both conference championship games could have weather temperature as part of the issue. Last week we saw games affected by the wind in Buffalo. But I don't know if you saw Kurt Warner's thread on Twitter where he took my stance. We had the argument years ago. Remember the New York Super Bowl that we went to go cover? Mm-hmm. And you were all in for it? Like, yes, give me cold weather Super Bowls. And I said, no, I don't want a game being affected by the weather of that magnitude.
Yeah.
Well, Kurt Warner believes that too, and a lot of people took him to task for it.
Really?
Yeah. Justin Tucker missed two field goals in one game. The wind was pretty strong, I'll say.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
He was saying to play indoors, right?
Yeah. Which, I mean,
you
can't always do that, but I do prefer when a game of great magnitude in the NFL has got perfect conditions.
You can combine Colin Cowherd and only play when the quarterbacks are healthy.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up.
We're waiting.
You got to play this. This
good.
From Cowherd Show on Fox Sports Radio.
But we want Mahomes against Josh Allen, right? Like, that's reasonable. And I'm sitting here this morning thinking, if I'm the NFL, Patrick Mahomes is going through protocol. I find the day Patrick Mahomes can play, that's when we play. Why not?
The audience can't see me right now, but
why not?
My head is in my hands.
Interesting.
That's a bad take. That's a real bad take.
Is that?
That's a really bad take.
That might be worse than the Baker Mayfield backward hat thing.
Interesting.
Is it? Can you imagine the can of worms that would open up?
They said we're not playing until Tuesday because we want.
The San Francisco 49ers could move to replay the whole season. Cardinals could move to replay the last game of the year against the Rams because their quarterback was hurt.
If you're Buffalo, you're like, what the hell? What are you talking about?
What planet are we on?
Awesome.
What planet are we on?
That's Earth. A great question. Okay. Yeah.
There's not a football fan. Well, I can't say that. Most football fans would prefer to see Patrick Mahomes healthy and playing in the AFC Championship game. If he can't play due to injury, tough noogies.
Tough noogies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember Mark Schlereth? I don't want to play him without their best players on the field. Forget that. Give me the most dinged up, injury decimated team possible.
Yes.
Squirting diarrhea.
Yes, that's
right,
too.
That's right.
The Bickley Blast is straight ahead. Woo-hoo. It's Bickley and Murata on this Wednesday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.